In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 387. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's going good. Just another good week of ball. I'm excited. This week I'll see Carolina Mudcats all week. So Jesus Mate, Luis Pena, Eric Batanti, Josh Adam Shefty, Adam Shesky, God, butchered that. There's a lot of good players on that team. So I'm really looking forward to that. They have a matinee game tomorrow morning, so I'll be heading over early to Columbia for that. So
nice.
Looking forward to seeing those guys all week. So it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm sure you're not the only one that's butchered that name before. there's a lot of letters in that name, a lot of, you know, letter combinations that those usually go together. For the most part. But yeah, that's a really fun. Do they have a good mascot? I'm trying to look at their mascot right now. Oh, okay. That's,
I wonder what it is. A mudcat, but like, what is their actual, like, yeah, mascot?
It's like a, is that a fish? Like, it looks more
it's a catfish.
Okay. Oh, mudcat, catfish. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. But that's, yeah, it's got like big old head, and then it's got all the whiskers and the.
Yeah, their mascot's exactly like the logo. Sometimes you never know. Like, they do like,
right,
the opposite thing. So is you don't know what they're going to do.
Exactly. But yeah, that's a fun team for sure. A lot of, Luis Pena's had red hot start the year. You know, Mate's doing his thing. A really fun team there. So I'm sure you'll get some good live looks there. We got a jam-packed episode this week. Got a lot of prospect promotions, a lot of, you know, hot starts here. We'll see who we're believing in, who we're not believing in. Some hot and cold prospects to close out the show. So really jam-packed episode. So let's get the housekeeping out of the way here. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at Chris Clegg, MILB. I am at Eric Cross, MLB. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more from each of us. And make sure you check out all the great content over on Rotoballer and win more with Rotoballer's MLB Premium Pass. Gain access to expert tools and advice from proven winners. Import your leagues with TeamSync and get expert advice customized for your league-specific settings. Win more with Rotoballer's lineup assistant tools, free agent finder, prop picks, and the number one DFS lineup optimizer. It also includes prospect rankings, dynasty rankings, and more content from Chris and I. Our premium pass comes with 100% money-back guarantee. Go to rotoballer.com/radio and use the discount code TOOLSHED at checkout to get 10% off and win more. All right, let's hop right into all these promotions here. And the biggest one here, Nick Kurtz, finally. I mean, let's just say finally. It's April 21st. It wasn't like it was like a Chris Bryant situation from way back in the day, but you know, Nick Kurtz tearing the cover off the ball this year, you know, leads the minors, I think, in extra base hits and total bases. Maybe he's got overtaken by Jordan Lawler, who's been red hot lately. But Nick Kurtz getting the call to a already pretty good athletics lineup. I think they're like top 10 in a lot of offensive categories, kind of like in that 8-9 range for the most part. And he'll hop right in the middle there with Rooker, with Lawrence Butler, you know, Jacob Wilson, who got the call. You know, recalled earlier this year, he's been hitting for a high average. Soderstrom breaking out. So really good lineup there, and he gets to join it. What are your expectations for him this year and long term, Chris? I mean, do you think we're looking at, you know, the next guy that's going to jump up there with, you know, Pete Alonso and Matt Olson in that range? You think the upside's that high?
I mean, it could be. I think that there's a pretty safe floor to hit, which is the nice thing. You know, I think that Kurtz brings the discipline. He brings good contact skills. You know, I think that ultimately, like, he's going to be a really solid player, and he's going to be in a good park to hit into. Like,
yep.
I'm not going to say that's why Tyler Soderstrom's breaking out, but it certainly helped. I mean, that park's going to help for the power, and those don't need power. Like, Kurtz isn't somebody that needs added power, but yeah, I think he can step right in and be really good from the get-go. I think the floor is just very high. Like, you look at him compared to, like, any other first baseman that came up. Let's just say, like, if Jack Caglione came up. Like, it's just a different kind of profile. Like, Cags is so aggressive, and Kurtz is kind of the opposite. So, like, I think that his eye and his patience is going to help him out. He's going to make pitchers throw him pitches to hit, or he's just going to take his walks. And I think he's in a really good spot to succeed out of the gate. That's kind of a fun lineup, and it's only getting better now. So, like, that team could kind of gel and vibe and be a team that does some damage, like, if the pitching works out for them. So I think Kurtz is in for a really solid, yeah, there's going to be some ups and downs, but I also think that he has a high enough floor to succeed from the get-go.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's why I had him ranked as my number one first base prospect, and even had him ahead of Sammy Basayo. I just thought the combination of floor and ceiling was better than any of the other guys, you know, that are in that discussion. I mean, you could say, you know, the ceilings are comparable with Basayo if you include him in this discussion, with Jack, with even Bryce Eldridge, who kind of gets almost forgotten about at this point with the emergence of the two big guys from last year's draft class. But I think you could say that all of their upside and ceilings are in a similar range, but I felt safer about Kurtz getting to that range and just with a safer floor in general, is given this blend of contact approach and power. I mean, he was hitting the cover off the ball, 56.5% hard hit rate, barrel rate around 22% so far in AAA. I'm very excited about that, and I think he can get up to be a, you know, top five first baseman long term. You know, but given the all around profile he has, and you know that lineup should be pretty good for the foreseeable future. I mean, they're up to seventh in WRC plus this year, and ninth in WOBA. So yeah, they're top 10 in lots of categories. They have 30 home runs, which is tied for seventh as well. So yeah, Oakland Athletics have a really good lineup, and now Kurtz is going to make it even better. Yeah, I'm definitely buying for sure on Nick Kurtz. Next up, I mean, he was the biggest name, but we got plenty of other fun ones here. Augustin Ramirez was probably the next biggest name on this list, and he already had reached base three times in his debut today as we're recording on Monday night. I don't know if the game still might be going on. It's near the end of that game, but he had two hits and a walk in four trips to the plate, including a 110-mile-an-hour double. I mean, this is a guy I saw early on last year, and you know, he really stood out on the field. The power's there. You know, contact skills are, you know, they're decent. I mean, he's not going to ever hit for a really high average, but this is a guy that walks at a good clip, and he'll keep the average respectable. I think he's more like a 250, 260 type of hitter with a good, you know, good OBP as well. And he's a catcher that can run a little bit too. I mean, I wouldn't expect the 22 steals last year, and he already had five, you know, in the minor leagues this year, had one tonight in his debut. I mean, he's not going to be a 20 steal guy, but you know, could he add, you know, 6 to 10 steals over a full year, something like that, to go with like maybe a 20 home run bat? Yeah, I think he could, and he'll get plenty of run here with this Marlins team. So, you know, he's a guy that's top 50 for me right now for fantasy focused prospect rankings, just given, you know, that power and a little bit of speed he brings to the table. So, yeah, I'm definitely a pretty big Ramirez guy. Chris, what are your thoughts on Ramirez this year and long term?
Yeah, no, I think it made sense. Like, we've kind of been clamoring for it for a while to just go ahead and bring him up. I mean, the Marlins had nothing to lose, and honestly, right, I think they lost by not bringing him up a couple weeks ago before the prospect promotion incentive deadline, which was April 9th or 10th. So they kind of missed the boat there. Could Augustin Ramirez make a run at Rookie of the Year? Maybe. It's not the question. So, you know, same thing with the Athletics and Kurtz. Like, it just didn't make sense. But the Marlins had a clear spot. Like, let's be honest, no catcher there was holding anybody. So,
right.
You know, now he's up. I think he's going to hit. There's power, as you mentioned. I think there's sneaky contact skills, and there have been for a while. You know, Ramirez has kind of gotten underrated in that sense where there are good contact, but he just hasn't got the love that he really deserves in that sense. But I think he's going to be really solid. And, yeah, the power, some sneaky speed from the catcher position, that's a lot of fun. So, yeah, we'll see how it fares. But really good move by the Marlins, in my opinion, and one that should have been made much earlier.
Yeah, no, absolutely should. And, yeah, like he's going to get plenty of run. I mean, unless he absolutely is abysmal at the plate and is striking out like 38% clip or something like that, I think they just give him plenty of time and let him kind of learn and adjust on the fly here, because why not? I mean, the Marlins are not contending this year, and you know, they should give Ramirez all the time in the world to settle in at the major league level. And I think long term, this could be, I mean, I don't think he's going to be like a stud, like top five catcher, but, you know, could I see a future where he's like, you know, flirting with like, you know, top 10 status at the position? Yeah, I think that's the upside we're talking about here with Ramirez. So, yeah, definitely. Yeah, ever since I saw him last year, I've been kind of in on Ramirez, and, you know, good to see him get off to a good start tonight in his debut. Not the only catcher, though, to get his major league debut over the last couple of days. A few days ago, Edgar Cairo got the call for the Chicago White Sox, not Kyle Teal. I think most of us thought Teal would be up first, but nope, it is Edgar Cairo, who was slashing .333, .444, .412 in 15 games for AAA Charlotte. One home run down there. So not really doing a lot of, not hitting them for extra base hits, but 11 walks to 14 strikeouts. Nice bounce back year for him last year. .280, .366, .463 with 16 home runs in 98 games between AA and AAA. Birmingham and Charlotte. Chris, what are your thoughts on Cairo here? I mean, he's kind of at a up and down minor league career. No, more up than down, but what do you think he can turn into for a fantasy catcher long term?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I was actually a little surprised that they brought him up before Teal. Just not really the expectation, at least from what I thought, where I thought Cairo was going to be developed a little bit further behind the plate in AAA. And maybe they thought, hey, we'll just let him develop in the majors. So that's exactly what they've done. You know, he just turned 22 not long ago. And you look at the profile, and you know, it's pretty solid across the board. I think there is some juice in the bat. Like, we've definitely seen that. He's shown good contact skills. There's been times when the approach is not the best. Like, he's prone to chasing at times. But, you know, early this year, you know, the underlying looked really similar to kind of what we had seen in past seasons. So I think that that's an encouraging thing in that sense, at least, where he was hitting for power. You know, the chase rate, it was actually down a little bit looking at his AAA sample in the early going. So that was a positive, and his own contact looked really good. So, you know, the biggest thing with Cairo is like defensive value, and that's kind of what I wondered. And that's why I personally believe Kyle Teal's a much more polished catcher behind the plate. And that's why I kind of thought he would have come up first, but yep, that wasn't the situation. But I do think Cairo's going to hit, and I think he'll be a solid option. Would I take Ramirez over him? Absolutely, though. Like, I'm much more comfortable with Ramirez in that spot in a fantasy league than Cairo at the moment.
Yeah, no, absolutely same here. And yeah, I mean, Cairo's just hitting, you know, it's not barreling the ball up. The hard hit rate's solid, but only a 3% barrel rate so far, which has been limiting him a bit. But I kind of wonder, like, how does this play out long term? Because, you know, Cairo, he's only catching. Teal's only catching. So I just kind of wonder, I don't think they're going to, like, split time with these guys. I mean, maybe they do. Maybe they do. I don't know. But I'm definitely higher on Teal than Cairo. I like Cairo a decent bit. But he's always been a guy that's been in that 125 to 150 range for me for the most part. And, you know, Teal's, I think, more like in the 60 range for me. Yeah, and then Ramirez, I think, is top of my head probably in the 40 range or so right now. So definitely like Ramirez more than Cairo. So if you want to target one of the two, I would go Ramirez as well. But yeah, I think Cairo could be like, you know, if he gets enough time, we'll see how this plays out long term. But he's one where I feel like he's going to be like a solid, like, two catcher league kind of guy. Like, never going to be probably going to get top 10, top 12 catcher at this position, but could he be like a top 20, top 25 guy? Sure. I mean, there's enough offensive juice there to kind of get to that level. So kind of what we're looking at here with Edgar Cayro. Next one here, we'll keep it in the American League Central with the Minnesota Twins bringing up Luke Kuechel, which I think kind of flew under the radar a little bit, giving all the other promotions. But he's off to a decent little start here, 4-for-12 in his first three games, stole a bag, got a walk in there as well, a couple of doubles. This is a guy that's been a little underrated for the most part in prospect rankings. He's not, doesn't have the flashy profile, but he gets the job done. He gets on base at a high clip, 420 OBP last year, to go along with a 303 average, 483 slug, 21 doubles, 15 home runs, and 23 steals in 103 games. That was split between high A Cedar Rapids and double A Wichita. When you look at the profile here, Chris, do you see a guy that's going to be like maybe not starting second base for fantasy purposes, but do you see maybe like a middle infield profile for fantasy purposes? Do you think there's enough juice in that bat to get up to that level for fantasy?
I do. I think it's kind of sneaky pop with Luke Kuechel, and he also just hits the ball at such ideal angles. Like, the exit velocities aren't going to jump off the page at you. I don't think he's going to be like, a plus exit velocity type. But I do expect Kuechel to have a lot of barrels just due to the angles that he hits the ball at. And that's going to create home runs. And he puts a lot of balls in play. He's good at pulling the ball, especially in the air. So those things help. And I think that Kuechel is going to be, you're going to look back and be like, yeah, he was never really flashy, but he's just really solid across the board. Like, he's going to have some 15 plus home run seasons. He's going to steal 15 to 20 bags. He's going to do it with good average and OBP. Like, this is somebody that, doesn't chase much, that has a really good approach, and I'd expect that to translate into the majors as well. So, very much a Luke Kuechel fan, and I think he's a great middle infield option for most leagues, for sure.
Yeah, I'm there with you. I've had Kuechel kind of, I think, around like the 50 to 60 range in my rankings now. I mean, he can run a bit. He's not a burner, but he'll steal some bags. I think he'll be like a 15, 18 homer guy long term. I mean, he's got 35% hard hit rate this year. And you mentioned the launch angle, 18 degrees on average right now, or what it was in AAA at least. So, yeah, I think there's a sneaky good value to be had here. Not a guy that's going to stand out in any one area, but can just do a little bit of everything, more of like a sum of the parts type of guy, but those guys have value as well. So yeah, I think Kuechel is a sneaky dynasty target right now. A few more here. We'll go over to some speedsters here with Caleb Durbin, who's probably one of the more, you could say he's one of the more polarizing prospects over the last 12 months or so.
Yeah.
Just set the Arizona Fall League stolen base record last year with 29 steals in 24 games out there. Coming off a 10 homer, 31 steal season last year in the Yankees org in 90 games with a 275, 388, 451 slash line. I mean, speed is there, walks more than he strikes out, and that's been kind of the case everywhere he's gone. But, Chris, is there enough juice with the bat to be more than just kind of like your, backup infielder, utility type of guy long term?
I mean, I'll probably take flack for this, but I'd say no. Like, I just think he's a utility bat. I think that's what he is. And, how useful is that? Like, how much can he actually steal in the majors? That's another question. Like, the clock times I have on Durbin are like average to above average speed. You look at the stolen bases, you may not see that. And yes, I understand that some players are just efficient and better at stealing bases. And Durbin is one of those guys. He's aggressive, he gets good jumps, and he can make it happen. But now you're facing major league catching, which is a little bit different. So how efficient is he going to be? He's going to have to perfect pulling fly balls. Like, he's going to have the Isak Paredes profile, because there's zero juice in the bat. Like, just doesn't have it. So I think that's something to watch. I guess EVs are going to be pretty low, I'd suspect. He's going to run good contact. Can he handle good fastballs up in the zone? That's my question. And that'll be answered. We'll see in time. But I kind of just think Durbin's a utility guy. Maybe not right now, because the Brewers do desperately need somebody to step up in that infield. I mean, Joey Ortiz has been terrible at shortstop, like in the field, but his bat's been terrible. They just couldn't get it to work. Vinny Capper's, you know, it was just a guy for a little bit, just kind of expect him to fall back to planet Earth, and he did, but they just haven't been able to fill that third base spot. And so now you're like, can it be Durbin? I think they hope that it can be, at least be that fill-in for now. I mean, they tried Oliver Dunn. They tried Andrew Monasterio, like, just didn't work. Tyler Black's hurt. So I think there's some runway with Durbin, but I do think long-term he is probably a utility bat.
Yeah, I'm kind of there with you. I mean, I don't know. I'm on the fence. I think he could maybe, just given that, the fact that he's going to get some run, like you kind of alluded to, and yeah, every other, you know, long-term, you know, third base option for them, you know, whether, you know, whether it be Brock Wilkin, you know, whether it be Eric Bitonti, you know, they're still a bit away. I mean, I don't think you see either of them this year, especially not Bitonti, probably not Wilkin either. So, you know, maybe he just does enough to hold the job and provide some value. I mean, I think he'll give you some decent steals. Like if he popped off like 18, 19 steals the rest of the year, one surprise, but even 20 plus. But yeah, the barrel rate super low with him. I don't see him being more than, I mean, full season. Could he run in the 10 home runs? Maybe, but that's like best case scenario. And I'm not even super confident about saying that. He's probably more like a 6, 7, 8 homer guy over a full year. But, you know, points leagues gets a little bit of a bump there. I feel just because, you know, high walk rate, lower strikeout rate, that's always kind of been his MO. So that there are formats where he does have some value. But yeah, I think just like the overall, if you're just playing in like a 12 team, you know, Yahoo league or something like that, the value of a Caleb Durbin is pretty limited unless you want those steals that he's probably going to provide here. But I was kind of loop in the one pitcher here, but also from the Milwaukee Brewers, Logan Henderson, who made his debut over the weekend and pitched very well. 6 innings, gave up 1 run, you know, only a few hits, 9 strikeouts in the game. You know, Henderson, though, Chris, he's been one that I feel like I've been a little lower than most on him. It's just the profile for me, just like that super heavy changeup profile has just been one, even though the changeup is a good changeup, don't get me wrong, and you know, he got 4 strikeouts on it in his debut, but you know, heavy changeup profile, you know, the fastball velocity not the greatest, hasn't really established that third, consistent third offering, at least, you know, mixes in a slider and a cutter as well. But I don't know, it's kind of similar to, I'm not making a direct comp, but how I felt about Drew Thorpe, it's just one of those types of profiles that I'm just not super into personally. But I don't know, maybe you are. Are you a Henderson guy here moving forward?
I like Henderson, but I do have concerns. I think that those are very warranted. I mean, I would say that Henderson's development has been really fun to watch. I do think the fastball, it's improved. I think that his slight advantage over like a Thorpe or Gavin Stahl, like those change-up heavy types, is that like he just creates so much ride, and it's such a unique look on his fastball. It's such a low release, like it's like a 5.1, 5.2 release height on that fastball, and he creates just an absurd amount of rides, like 17 inches from that low height, so it's like well above average from the release point. The arm angle's tough, like he creates some tough angles, and I think that helps him. Changeup's really good. Like the changeup pitch data is absurd. Like you watch it,
yep,
and it's just it's such a beautiful pitch to watch. But he's going to have to establish the slider, I'd say. He has thrown some cutters, but I'd really like to see a slider or some kind of breaking ball further developed, a pitch that gives him some depth. Because while the slider does have depth, just doesn't throw it. Like he doesn't throw it enough, I believe, to be effective. Like he threw it twice in the major league debut. Like I want to see more than that. So we'll see if that can be further developed. I do have those slight concerns, though, because we've seen the history of change-up first-type players that were, yep, you know, effective in the minors because good changeups are hard to hit for a lot of hitters. You get to the majors, all of a sudden, you got to have something else. And I still want to see, yeah, the start was dominant. Like, you can't argue what Henderson did. Unfortunately, sent him back down. Dumb choice, in my opinion, but whatever. I get why they did it, but still, they could have kept him up. I don't know. I think it'll be a mixed bag. I do want to see a breaking ball further develop, though.
Yeah.
No, I'm 100% with you on that. I mean, at this point, it's kind of odd when some, you know, pitchers don't have at least some sort of a breaking ball, especially a slider these days. It feels like everyone has one at this point. But, yeah, would love to see just even, you know, whether it be the cutter or slider, if he develops a curve, something to go with that fastball changeup. Then I feel a little bit better about investing in Logan Henderson. But, you know, still a decent arm. I'll give him that for sure. Last name here, Chandler Simpson with the Tampa Bay Rays. Obviously, everyone knows about the speed. He has 198 combined steals over the last 2 years in 225 games, which is just an insane ratio. At 104 last year, was caught just 17 times, which seems like a lot, but when you attempt 121, still pretty good success rate. More walks than strikeouts last year as well. I mean, he's a two-trick pony. I mean, not two-trick, but he makes contact. You know, the approach is good, you know, and he obviously has elite speed. I mean, talking about a guy that once scored on a sac fly from second base. I mean, that's just stupidly, like, elite. This is back when he was at Georgia Tech. So probably, like, what, does that three, four, what year did he used 2022 draft, if I recall, right? 2022 draft. So, yeah, this is a few years ago at that point. But just stupid elite speed off the charts. But we've seen this type of profile just not last long. You could have some value for a few years, but so you see, like, the one Pierre's fizzle out. You know, all these types are just, like, speed first with no impact whatsoever. That's what you're getting with Simpson, is he's going to be a zero in the home run department and a zero in the RBI department. You know, maybe he can get you some good runs scored and average and obviously the speed. So you're hoping for three categories here. But it's just a risky profile. Plus, does Tampa Bay play him full-time? We know they loved Platoon, except for, like, their, you know, few top guys. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure if I'm – I mean, I like Simpson, but I don't have any shares of Simpson either. I don't know. Do you have any shares, Chris? Like, what do you think here? Like, is this someone you'd want to target, or – I don't know. It's just a weird profile overall.
It's a very tough profile for fantasy purposes. Like, all I've seen or all the pushback I've gotten is like, oh, like, he's been elite contact. And, yeah, like, he absolutely has. There's no denying that. The speed is elite. But, like, the Billy Hamilton comp just rings true in my head. And people are quick to push that away. But you look at the kind of contact Billy Hamilton made during the peak of his career, and I think those are the kind of numbers that we can expect Chandler Simpson to run. I mean, yeah, Simpson's put up really good contact rates in the minors. It's the minors, though, and I think you have to acknowledge that there's just a different way that major league pitchers are going to pitch you, knowing what you bring to the table. And Hamilton ran like 88, 89. He had four straight seasons where he was 89% zone contact. And in those seasons, it was like 83 to 84% overall. Those are really good marks. And I think Simpson is going to put up marks similar. The chase rates for Billy Hamilton those years was like 25, 30%. And I think pitchers are just going to say, like, we're going to make Chandler Simpson beat us, because you see he can beat you. He can hit a ground ball to first base and beat you. There's a lot of ways he can make it work. But I think it's going to be a harder transition for this kind of profile. How good's the glove? You know, I think that's still the question as well. But the speed burns, man. And, you know, for those years, Billy Hamilton was a really good fantasy asset because he stole so many bases. I mean, he had those four seasons that I referenced from 2014 to 2017, in his prime, he was averaging, he had 56, 57, 58, 59. That's bizarre to look at and see that he went up one steal each year.
Right in the order, yep.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Like, it was just an escalator of one steal every year. And if Simpson steals 60 bags, like, you know, it's going to be good. But, like, what kind of average does it come with? I don't think he's going to be a 300 hitter in the majors. It's going to be tough to do. And, like, what kind of OBP is he running? So, yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see. I'm not one to invest in this kind of profile. Also, like, you put all your eggs in one basket with stolen bases, the player gets hurt, you out of luck. So that's a tough way to it's like living on the edge for fantasy, and I'm just not sure I want to do that. So, you know, I'm not super in here personally, and I like Simpson. I think he's a fun player, but for fantasy, it's just a tough profile.
Oh yeah, he's fun to watch, but yeah, I never had any shares of Juan Pierre or Billy Hamilton or Scotty Podsednik or any of those types. Scotty Pods had a little bit of power. I think he had a couple of years. He was like in the 10 to 15 home run range. But yeah, I've just never been in that. And it's something I've said a lot too. Like, don't put your eggs in that one basket for speed, because you know if you do, okay, great. When it's working out, fine. But what if Simpson gets hurt? I mean, that's why I like spreading my power around, spreading my speed around, and not just relying on like two or three guys to get me, you know, everything I need in one category. So yeah, he'll be fun, but yeah, I'm not, like, I don't have any shares, and I probably won't have any shares. That's not to say you shouldn't have any shares. I'm not like saying no to Simpson. It's just, you know, if you need speed, obviously he's great and probably gets you a decent average as well, but just be aware that he's not going to provide you anything in two of the, you know, the five standard categories. All right. That's enough promotions. There's a lot of them, but all pretty fun ones, though. Let's hop on over to the Major League side, but keep it in Florida with Max Meyer, the Miami Marlins 26-year-old righty who has just been off to a phenomenal start this season. As we, you know, recorded tonight, he just finished up a 14-strikeout gem over six shutout innings, 24 whiffs, 16 whiffs on the slider alone. Now has a 2.10 ERA and 41 strikeouts in his first five starts of the season. Man, I mean, I think we've been waiting for Meyer to do something. He's been pretty mediocre, I think is the best word to use for his career so far. Yeah. It was just 13 starts, you know, entering this year. He had the two back in 2022. Then he missed some time, came back at 11 last year, 5.68 ERA, 1.42 whip, and only an 18.5% K rate. But now he's striking out a lot of guys. But I don't know, Chris, you look at the profile. I mean, you know, fastball velocity's up. You know, he's using the, you know, sinker a little more this year. You know, fewer four-seamers, but the four-seamer is still getting hit around. The slider is phenomenal. I mean, obviously, the slider's been phenomenal this year. Batting average against under 100, whiff rate above 50% now after this outing. But are you still a little, like, weird? He's only going to the slider still, and it's still, I don't know. This feels like a profile where there's got to be regression coming. It's still kind of a flawed profile, though. I do like the, you know, addition to the sinker and the sweeper as well. He's really a five pitch guy now instead of a three pitch guy. That's good to see. But I don't know if his slider's not fully on. I think he's got to, you know, still have his struggles. But I think he's not as bad as he's been the previous couple of years. But I also don't think that Meyer is all of a sudden, like, I'm not going to say he's going to be a top 25 guy. I mean, I think he's going to be, you know, maybe in that 50 to 75 range. So right now, maybe I'd lean more towards selling if you want to sell off this hot start, though I do believe there are some good qualities here with Meyer, but I'm still a little hesitant. But what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I mean, I think that based on what we've seen, you know, it's certainly fair to believe that he is making a jump, but how much of a jump's he making? I think that's the other question. Changeup's been a big part of his arsenal. You know, he was effective tonight with the changeup as we're recording this. He faced a lot of lefties. So you look, he threw the changeup 18 times versus lefties, obviously a right-handed arm, and he threw the slider 19 times. So he used the changeup almost as often as the slider, which he led with. So it's obviously pretty notable. Changeup's a good pitch. And I think that that's been a awesome progression to see, is that he has really developed that. You look, and the four seam was his least used pitch in the start tonight when he just dominated. Still in a sweeper. I think that's encouraging. That slider's dirty, and it's evident. 16 whiffs on 21 swings, a 76% whiff rate on the slider.
Pretty good.
That's pretty crazy, yeah. So you like to see that. You like to see Chase at a 56% chase rate on it. So I think the recipe for success here for Max Meyer to continue to use the fastballs less. Like, I think the four or the two seam, the sinker is a good route for him. And he did. He's using that more than we had seen from him previously. Like, I think that the recipe is the slider. It's more efficiently using the changeup and sequencing. We saw that. If that success continues, then I think Max Meyer could be in for a really good year. He was close to bullpen bound, in my opinion. And I'm not so sure like that's the case anymore. Like, he's come back from surgery and looks really, really good. And I'm pretty impressed the fact that he's missing bats and keeping the ball on the ground.
Yeah, I mean, that sinker has led to a 6.5% jump in ground ball rate this year. Air rate's down, obviously. Pull air rate's, you know, was 6.3% entering the start. So still good, you know, definitely some good things going on here. And I'm not like ready to go like full-fledged Blake out with him, but definitely encouraging to see some of these, you know, changes he's made so far this season. You know, next name here, you know, we'll keep it in Florida again. Go back to the Tampa Bay Rays with Shane Baz, who did have a, you know, lackluster start in his last time out against the Yankees, but had been rolling along and still has a 3.22 ERA through his first four starts, 1.07 WHIP, 30 strikeouts, which is a 33.7% strikeout rate, 8 walks so far in 22. In a third innings. I mean, Baz obviously staying healthy is the big thing with him, as you know, as it has been for his entire career, pretty much. But always kind of knew that this upside was there, just about getting the innings back under his belt. I mean, the fastball velo is up this year, averaging 96.8, was 95.6 last year, and just has the good swing and miss offerings with the curveball and the changeup. Even the slider in the past has been a better swing and miss offering for him. Not really, you know, getting the whiffs on it this season. You know, all of his strikeouts have come on the four-seamer curveball, which is leading the way, and then the changeup. But all three of those pitches have been very, very effective for him so far, and he's throwing those a combined 90.6% of the time. I mean, he had one of the best minor league seasons we've seen in the last, you know, 5-6 years. A lot of upside here. Still only 25 years old, Chris. And he's been, feels like he's been around for a bit, which he has, but still only 25. Are you confident, you know, given the track record so far with Baz, all the good, all the bad, you know, durability, how confident are you in him right now? You looking to buy? You still kind of fading due to the issues he's had? Where are you at on him right now?
I think he's a really good buy still. I think you're going to see some ups and downs, and we've seen it. I mean, you know, he's had the 10 and 11 K starts so far this year. The start against the Yankees, not the best. Four walks is really the biggest thing. And he's had 2 4 walk starts this year, which obviously is a pretty notable thing in my opinion, that he's, you know, struggling to command the ball at times. But then the other two starts, 0 walks. It's like, it's been so hit or miss. And when he's on, he's really good. I think you're going to get more of the good than the bad, though. And I think you're going to end up being really happy with what you get from Shane Baz, because the fastball velo ticking up is huge. Like, that's obviously the first step. Like, he's sitting a mile and a half higher than he had previously. He's also using the curveball much more, and you look at those starts where he's found success with the strikeouts and the spin, that pitch has been really good. Curveball and changeup have been the predominant used pitch. The four seams pulled back a little bit. I think there's some value when you can lead with a secondary and get results. So that's kind of the trend that I've noticed for Baz, is that his best starts, he's using the curveball as often, or if not more often, than the fastball, and is getting really dominant results. So yeah, very interested in Baz and what he brings to the table. I think he's a buy for me.
Yeah. I think he's a buy for me as well. I mean, I've always been a Baz guy, and we saw him out in the Arizona Fall League a few years ago, and just pumping 100 back then. You know, always loved the stuff, and the stuff has been absolutely nasty. You know, I had a chance to talk with him several years ago, you know, back on the now defunct Five Tool podcast way back in the day, and you know, that was before his breakout year, and just everything he said, I loved what he was working on and what he was focusing on the following year, and he followed through with that, and everything he said he was trying to do, he did, and then some. So you know, really fun guy to talk to. So always been rooting for Shane Baz, and it's nice to see him starting to break out now. Just hopefully he can stay healthy. That's just the biggest, you know, concern, obviously, I have with him and everyone has with him. So the one reason why I'm still slightly hesitant, but, you know, talent alone, love Shane Baz. And, yeah, I definitely agree. He's a strong buy right now in dynasty leagues. All right, a couple of hitters that are surging right now. You know, a lot of first basemen are surging this year. I mean, we've already talked about Soderstrom and obviously Ben Rice, who we talked about too, Aranda, Michael Bush. You know, several others are doing pretty well. But Spencer Torkelson, kind of back from the dead last year, hit 219 in 381 plate appearances. So far this year, 101 plate appearances, 286, 386, 619 with 7 home runs so far. And you look, you know, strikeout rates kind of in line with last year. Still a little high, but not terrible. He's walking more than he ever has. He's hitting the ball harder than he ever has. 16.5% barrel rate, 47% hard hit rate. And, you know, he's chasing, you know, still has a decent chase rate. He's always had the decent, you know, decent chase rate, better than league average. You know, contact skills have always been kind of in the vicinity of league average. So even when he was hitting poorly on the surface, but the you know, metrics under the hood never fully, like, you would have imagined, like, oh, the zone contact's terrible. No, it never really has been. And now he's, you know, getting to the barrel more. He's walking more. He's really kind of coming into his own right now. And, I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be a stud or anything right now, but, you know, I think, could he have the best year of his career this year? I think, yeah. I mean, he had 31 home runs, 233 average back in 2023. I mean, I think he can get up right up in that 30 homer range with a better average and OBP than he showed that year. So I'm not saying he's a strong buy, but I think I'd say moderate buy. I'm mostly buying in on Torque right now, but I'm probably, you know, I'm not the highest on Torque. Everyone's always been higher than me on Torque, dating back to his prospect days. So I'm sure there's more people that are higher on Torque than me, but I think he could get into that, you know, maybe that back end top 100 dynasty discussion once again. What are your thoughts, Chris?
Yeah, the approach has always been good. As you mentioned, the contact skills have always been fine. Like, it's always kind of been about the quality and what he was whiffing at. And I think this year, like, he's back to doing damage on fastballs, which he had to do. It's like, you look at the results kind of in 2023 when he hit 30-plus homers, like, he got the results on the fastball. He had 16 homers off fastballs. He hit 270 on that pitch type. It was just good results all around. Average EV of near 95 on fastballs, whiff rate of 17%. And last year, while he didn't whiff a ton against fastballs, he just wasn't doing the same damage on them. The quality of contact was not nearly as good. But it's back this year. Like, the quality of contact on fastballs is really good, and it's kind of setting him up for everything else. So I think that's of note. He's also kind of changed where he is in the box, which I think is notable. You look at, like, the bat tracking metrics on Savant, and, you know, that's something, too, to look at. Like, you know, what changed, but I think that he has done some things to put himself in better spots and make better quality of contact. So that's interesting to see, because, like, he's making contact much deeper than he has previously, but he's also deeper in the box himself. So his point of contact is like 4-5 inches deeper, but he's 6 inches deeper in the box. That kind of translates a little bit, but he's also more open in the stance. Feels like he's just seeing the ball better. And he's getting results. So, you know, you can't really argue right now with what he's doing. Who would I prefer out of, like, the surging first baseman? Like, for me, it's Tyler Soderstrom pretty easily, but
agreed, yep.
Torque has some value. He's got 7 homers and 101 plate appearances, so he's swinging it for sure.
No, yeah, I agree. I have Soderstrom over him as well, but who would you prefer long-term between Torque and Ben Rice, the other kind of surging first baseman?
It's a good question. I think that it's probably Rice, but I'm not sure it's all that different. Like, Rice just barrels up the ball better. He's in a better ballpark. That helps. Lefty Yankee Stadium versus Torque in Comerica. Yeah, not great.
Yep.
But the contact skills would be interesting. Like, I think they're not a lot different when we talk about, like, the type of contact they make, how much contact, and the approach as well. So it's semi-close for me.
Yeah, I do lean Rice as well, and that's why I've always really liked Rice. I mean, I saw him in AA, and he was just on. That was when he was took the Eastern League by storm back in 2023, 2022. I can't remember at this point. I think 2023. But yeah, this that ability to barrel up the ball as a lefty in Yankee Stadium. That's why I was so excited about him. So it took him a little bit of time to get going at the major league level. But yeah, I do prefer Rice over Torque. But yeah, I'd be willing to buy Torque as well if the price is right. I mean, I haven't really said that much over the last several years. But yeah, he's definitely made some adjustments and he's looking really damn good right now. And this next guy here, Bryce Terang. Chris, what the bleep is going on with Bryce Terang? I mean, he's swinging harder than ever before, hitting the ball harder than ever before. He's got 3 home runs, 8 steals, 23 runs scored, 322, 358, 437 slash line so far. I mean, we're talking about a guy that had a 29.7% hard hit rate last year, 49.3 so far this year. Average EV is up almost 6 miles an hour as well. Like, those are like monumental improvements. I mean, obviously, I don't think he's going to stick that high, Chris, but you know, are you, you know, I mean, there's tangible changes here. Are you believing that, you know, Terang could be a, you know, maybe even a top 10 second baseman moving forward?
Yeah, and I was very low on Terang coming into the season, and looks like I'm going to eat that a little bit. I just really didn't buy, like, the home runs he hit last year. Thought it was going to be just a empty kind of speed profile. He hasn't been that at all. I mean, the bat speed's up, like, so that's the first thing to note. Like, he added bat speed. It's still really low bat speed. So I think that's, you have to take that into account. But his bat speed is up 3 miles an hour. It went from like worst in the league to like, you know, bottom 15th percentile of the league. But somehow he's squaring up the ball. He's making barrels. He's hitting the ball hard. Like, it's 93 mile an hour average. He'd be like, it's an interesting case study. Like, in my opinion, you look at it and you're like, okay, like, how, with what he's doing, is he creating this kind of damage? And I'm a bit confused on this. Another one that's changed his stance. He's deeper in the box. The point of contact's much deeper. And it's working. The swing's longer. I am just kind of baffled about the profile, if I'm being honest with you. But everything he's doing seems somewhat sustainable. Like, he's not going to run 93 mile an hour average exit velocity all year, but like, we already blew past the max. Like, he hit a ball 2 miles an hour harder than he did last year already. So that's of note. The barrel rate being up early, like, the sweet spot rate's up despite the launch angle being down. That's a positive thing. Hard hit rate's through the roof, as you mentioned. Like, it's fascinating because he doesn't pull any balls in the air either. Like, that's, it's another flaw. Like, he has a 2.8% pull air rate. So, like, there's no balls getting in the air to the pull side. That's one of the worst marks in the league. Contact's good. The approach is good. Like, I don't know. It's just one of those weird profiles that just might rack your brain and just work every year. And so, it's interesting.
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention. That super low pull air rate. The ground ball rate's actually a couple ticks higher this year than it was last year. It's 56.3%. Launch angle is even down a little bit, only 5.2 degrees on average. But, you know, it's a decent enough sweet spot rate. Yeah, he's just making it work. But, I mean, I don't think he's going to be. I mean, you what, 7 home runs last year? I mean, maybe what? I still would say, what, 12, 13 this year? But I'm not ready to go even like 15 to 20 range, even with the quality of contact increases he's made. But, you know, if he can just get to like 10, 11 home runs, I mean, he's probably not going to steal 50 again. Actually, he might. He's actually on pace to steal 50. So, I mean, if you're getting 40-plus steals with double-digit home runs and a solid average, yeah, that's top 100 overall probably, and, you know, top 10 at this position, because second base is kind of a black hole right now. All the, you know, top guys are either struggling, hurt, getting old. You got a couple young guys on the way, but yeah, I think this position needs Terang to be at least like a top 10 guy right now. So, yeah, definitely some tangible changes there for sure. All right, let's go over to some hot and cold prospects to close out the show. Our first one being Hyesung Kim, if you want to call him a prospect or not. Some do some don't, but off to a solid start so far in AAA Oklahoma City. 19 games, already has 7 doubles, 4 home runs, and 6 steals with a 265, 322, 518 slash line, but also 5 walks, 225 strikeouts. And we actually have another Dodger on the 3-up right now who's off to a good start of the season. That's Alex Freeland. Also a middle infielder here, 21 games, slashing 329, 412, 494, 11 doubles, 1 home run, and 6 steals so far. So both Freeland and Kim off to pretty good starts of the year for Oklahoma City, Chris. You know, who do you prefer long-term, and kind of what do you think the ETA and path to playing time is for these guys?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. Like, where do they fit? Because Tommy Edman's swinging at, like, one of the best hitters in the game.
What's going on to Tommy Edman? I mean, not to get off track, but he's been phenomenal since he came to the Dodgers.
Yeah, like, he's been absurd. And, I mean, so he's playing second, got Mookie at short. I guess the path is in center, but I assume Kim's never played center until this year, so that's interesting. I think Freeland's going to get the call first because he's versatile. Like, he can play kind of all over the infield. I think the Dodgers kind of value that utility.
Yep.
Kim, he's interesting. I hit a 462-foot home run. It's a PCL. Like, I just don't believe in the power all that much. Contact's good. He's got a beautiful swing. But also, there's some concerning contact against with breaking balls. So, like, that's something I think to keep an eye out on is, like, you know, will he make enough contact against major league pitching? So, I don't know. That'll be interesting. I think Freeland's a safer profile. Like, the versatility is nice. And Kim's versatile, too. So, don't get me wrong there. But I'm definitely in camp Alex Freeland here and think the call-up's probably pretty soon. Like, I would not be shocked to see him up just, you know, over the next couple of weeks. Yeah. Where does he fit? That's the question, but I think it could happen.
Yeah, he can play some third as well. So, you know, is it in an everyday role? Maybe not, but if there's an injury, yeah, I think if there's an injury in the infield, I do lean Freeland as well. Maybe Kim gets a shot in center field or something, but yeah, Freeland has been just hitting the ball really hard in AAA right now. 64% hard hit rate. He's over double. You know, the quality of contact between Freeland and Kim is not even remotely close. It's about an 8.5 to 9 mile an hour gap in average exit velocity. Hard hit rate 64% to about 30.5% for Hyesung Kim. So, but you know, Kim can run. Get solid. He's got probably better contact skills, but Freeland made some gains last year in the contact department too. So, but only the one home run this year. He's kind of not elevating as frequently as he probably should. But yeah, I like Freeland. He was one of those guys where I was going through the Dodgers org and made a pretty big jump in my rankings after I dug into him more. He's always been kind of flown under the radar, given all the other buzzier names the Dodgers have had in their system. But he's legit. Just kind of wonder when he gets the shot and if that's in a full-time role, we shall see. But both of them off to good starts to the season here. I'll keep it in the NL West for our third up here, and that Slade Caldwell of the Arizona Diamondbacks, you know, was a first-round pick this past year, 29th overall to the D-backs out of high school, and off to a really hot start to his career in low A in the California League. First 13 games, 9 extra base hits, 7 of those doubles, 1 home run, 3 steals, 342, 535, 634 slash, and nearly as many walks as strikeouts, 15 to 17 so far. I mean, one of the buzzier names in the draft class, you know, a little undersized, but really fun player. So, Chris, what do you think of the profile, and how are you valuing Slade Caldwell moving forward?
Yeah, you know, he kind of fits in that short king demographic. You know, there's think of players like Joe Williams, like those kind of guys, and Slade can swing it. I think that he plays above the size that you might expect. He's got bat speed for his size, too, and you know, we've seen that. Like, he's kind of scored some balls around the yard. He's got speed. I think everybody thinks it's a second coming of Corbin Carroll. Like, I'm not sure you can do that. Like, that's just hard to do. And no one, I think that every time now people see a small, speedy lefty, they're like, all right, right. Corbin Carroll. Same thing with, you know, the Aaron Judge, the big body Aaron Judge comps. But I think Caldwell can be a really good prospect. I think right now he's a top 100 prospect. I kind of wonder if he's better than Jett Williams as is. He's kind of looking at the metrics and kind of trying to figure that out. He's young too. It's Caldwell's young.
Right.
So I like the profile a lot. And I think that he's got a pretty high floor to succeed. So yeah, I'm fascinated to see what he does, but I'm in. I think he's top 100 right now, has room to grow for sure.
Yeah. I mean, Jett Williams has a longer track record, but yeah, now I'm starting to, he mentioned that as I have Williams ahead in my rankings, but now I'm not sure if I want to. That's something I'll have to look at too, you know, next couple of days before I do my next update. But yeah, Caldwell, you know, really fun athlete. I mean, he's a premium athlete. There's no doubt about that. Guy that's probably going to be, you know, could be a 30 steal guy down the road. I mean, he's more advanced than most 18-year-olds you see. And he'll be 19 in, looks like, a couple months, middle of June. He'll turn 19. So playing about half this year at age 18, you know, very advanced. And there's definitely some power upside. Yeah, it's not Corbin Carroll levels, but, you know, could Caldwell be like a 15-homer guy? Yeah. You know, could he be a top-of-the-order table setter, stealing some bags, getting on base? I think so. I mean, that's the type of profile you're looking at here, if everything clicks. Really fun profile, and yeah, definitely one on the rise for sure. A couple of three guys that are on the downward swing right now, a couple of shortstops and a catcher. Now we'll start with Carson Williams and Colson Montgomery are the two shortstops here. And then we got Theron Lorenzo as the catcher, off to a poor start. Carson Williams, we'll start with him. You know, one home run so far in 19 games. You know, only three extra base hits total in 19 games. One double, one triple, one home run, three steals, but slashing 164, 301, 262 with 29 strikeouts in 19 games. So not the greatest start of the season for him. And Montgomery is another one that's striking out at a pretty high clip as well. He's got 35 strikeouts to only four walks in 18 games so far. 178, 241, 301 slash. All right, so I guess kind of clump these two together, Chris. Who are you more concerned about right now between Montgomery and Williams?
I think that it's Montgomery. Like, Williams always has the glove to fall back on. He's got the speed to fall back on. And Colson has injuries to fall back. Like, he's got a lot of injury history. We've seen some regression kind of across the board, which is interesting. Like, we've seen, yeah, I want to confirm, but if I remember right, we're looking at kind of like 3 years of contact regression. He's hit about 115 and a half this year. It's like, that's still good. The power's there. But, like, where's the contact? It doesn't look great. The approach has kind of worsened year over year. I honestly think at this point he's in his own head.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, he hasn't cracked that team yet. It's like, man, like, it feels like he should have, you know? This is the White Sox we're talking about. They should have given him a chance, like, time after time. And he hasn't got it yet. So I can see where it's frustrating to him. And it feels like he's wasting his time in AAA. So I'm much more concerned about Colson at this point versus Carson Williams. Williams is a streaky hitter, but he's got power, he's got speed, and he's got one of the best gloves in the game. So that obviously helps him. And the approach is solid too, even if the contact's not there. So yeah, I'll say I'm much more concerned about Colson than I am Carson.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I've always been much higher on Williams than Montgomery. It's because, you know, you could maybe make an argument that Montgomery's got more power upside, but, you know, Williams could be a 20-homer bat in the zone, right? He's always kind of felt like that, you know, 2020-ish guy with like a 240, 250 average, something like that, a little bit on the lower end there. But like you mentioned, you know, that's why I've never been as high on Montgomery as most, because he doesn't have the speed to fall back on. So it's like you need the, you know, both the, you know, hit tool and the power to be there to really stand out if you're not going to add more than, you know, a little bit, you know, handful of steals every year. That we did have eight last year, but you know, he had a strikeout rate issue last year. Like, was it because of the hand or you know, more of an approach thing? Though he did walk at a pretty high clip last year. But yeah, this year the approach has just been absolutely terrible. Do you have his chaser? I mean, I want to see what his chaser is. Do you have that right in front of you, Chris?
Colson?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's where'd it go? 34%.
Okay, so that's, yeah, I mean, that's not great, but that's not, I was thinking it might be like closer to 40 right now, but.
It's very high, higher than you'd like to see.
What was it, you know what it was last year?
Yeah, let me pull it real quick.
I'd imagine lower than that.
I'm almost certain it was much lower.
I'll say 27%. Let's see.
26.
Okay, yeah.
It's a pretty substantial difference. Yeah, so I know it's early, but still.
That's still an 8%. Increase that is, yeah, notable, even if it is 18 games. I mean, 18 games, we're starting to get, I mean, it's still small, but not like, it's not like six games or anything like that. So, yeah, definitely 35 strikeouts to four walks, very, very concerning. So, you know, Williams is still like a top 50 guy for me. Montgomery was already out of my top 100. I think he was maybe back end top 100. He's always been floating around that 100 range, but you know, definitely dropping down a bit here. So, yeah, I'm more concerned with Colson, Montgomery, than Carson Williams. Last name here, Theron Lorenzo, off to a poor start as well. He has 21 strikeouts in his first 10 games for Double-A Erie, 167, 333, 278 slash. This was a guy that was getting a little bit of you know, hype again after, you know, a down start to the year. I mean, he had 24 home runs in 2023. In low A for the Dodgers as a 19-year-old, started really building that prospect hype, and then really poor start to the year last year. But then once he came over to Detroit in that midseason deal, finished the year 315, 470, 562 with five home runs, seven doubles, and more walks than strikeouts in his last 26 games for high A West Michigan. But off to a really poor start this year, only one home run so far. So it's only 10 games, but those 21 strikeouts in 10 games, that's an alarming number, nearly a 50% K rate so far. Are you reading into this at all, Chris, or just a poor start and you think we'll get it going here?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think that there's still a lot to like. Yeah, the strikeouts have been a little bit concerning for Lorenzo, but I do think he'll bounce back. Like, he's still hitting the ball hard. I think he had a 110 shot the other day, maybe on Sunday, if I'm not mistaken. I'm going to pull up and confirm that. But yeah, I mean, he's been fine. I don't think that we're like, I'm dropping him off or anything like that. You know, he's still swinging it fine. I think the contact will come around for him. Right now, yeah, the contact rates are a little concerning, but again, it's early. So, you know, I've seen a decent amount of him, and I think he's going to be all right. So still in on Lorenzo, and I believe that he'll get it going pretty soon. It's pretty cold, you know, where they're playing right now. So not to say that's an excuse or anything, because a lot of guys are playing in it. But, you know, at the same time, I believe that he'll be fine, get back to that power and be solid.
Yeah, that's definitely a good thing to keep in mind, is where are these guys playing? I mean, yeah, as someone that's in a cold weather state that has been in many dozens and hundreds of April minor league games here in Portland, Maine, when it's been in the upper 30s, low 40s, that's not fun. It's not fun to sit there, and I can't imagine playing a baseball game in that weather, though I have back in high school. But yeah, not fun. So you gotta give these guys a little bit of a break. Because West Michigan, I'm sure, isn't much warmer, you know, than Maine is right now. But all right, that's gonna wrap up the show. Thanks everyone for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We will be back with you again next week. But until then, everyone, take care.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.